SRN, Survival Radio Network.
Quite honestly, it feels like we just said it was 2016. I have no idea where that year went, although many things happened. Wow, it was an interesting year. But who better to talk about 2016 than the one and only Michelle Gilliam to the Morrissey? What up, lady?
I'm telling you, I am moving up in the world. I joke with you about this often, but I remember the days when I would be brought in on a show about 7-8, 7-0-9. I'm coming in the first 10 seconds now. I am well trusted. Well trusted and house trained. How about that?
She said house trained. See, Lord Jesus. See how you clowning
how
already?
Yeah, Betty New Year. What's, name that song. Name that line. Where is that from?
I don't know.
You don't know? Oh, my goodness.
No.
I should throw a promo out there and say, you know, our free coaching for the first call in to identify where that line is from. Come on now. Trading Places, the scene where on the train.
Yeah.
Wow. Eddie Murphy was in the get-up and Coleman the butler had on the Irish priest outfit and Jamie Lee Curtis. Now, you probably remember Jamie Lee Curtis in the Swedish get-up.
Well, yeah. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis was, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
The bombshell. Yeah.
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 For you younger folks, you wouldn't know about that. Younger folks don't know that.
Yeah. That was like 83.
Boy, that Jamie, let me just say this.
Well, see, now you're stuck. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, now you got me. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's your fault.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Always my fault. So how are you?
I'm not as good as you, obviously. You're like 4 days in the year and just on 100 crunk already.
Well, ain't that what we're supposed to do? Isn't that how we flow? Okay.
Yeah. These 4 days have been interesting. Let me just say this. They have been something else.
Well, you know what you're going to do. Step up to the plate and elevate.
Yeah, you know, I've been looking for my big draws, but I just haven't been able to find them. I think I don't know if I packed them away or what's going on.
You'll figure it out. You always do, bro.
You know I will. But, you know, so here's something. Looking back now, because it's in the rearview mirror, it's gone, it can come back again. 2016, albeit 365 days worth, it just really flew by. What did it mean to you? what, you know, as you look back on it, can you wrap it up in a few sentences for you, or is it too deep? Is it too, is it much deeper than that?
I don't have anything, I guess, notable about 2016. It was another year of getting better and wiser, I feel like, you know. It's just another chapter in the journey.
Hmm. It felt like you did a lot more appearances.
Oh, yeah. That's always great. So, yeah. So, business-wise, it was fantastic. But, you know, when you run your mouth all the time, you don't really notice if you're at the dinner table in the front of the room. You're like, oh, yeah, I did that more.
Yeah.
Thank you for acknowledging that. So, yes, I got the chance to do a women's leadership conference at the University of Florida and, of course, Marcus Temple with Sharon Washington. And I'll be back there in October 2017 to do a panel appearance. And let me see. Gosh, I had a mention in the American Express open forum and also a mention in the Middle Eastern Business Journal. And there are a few more appearances that just aren't coming to mind right now. But I guess you're right. 2016 was a good year for Michelle Gilley Morris in Lucidity. Almost forgot my own company's name.
See? That's okay. I would have reminded you. I got it down pat.
And something new on the horizon that I can tell scant details about is that I'm a part of a design team for a charter school that's going to be for all boys that is being spearheaded by an NFL player. So just to be able to be on the groundwork of something like that and doing the hard work of, helping to develop curriculum that is socially, emotionally enriched, and just to equip our boys to be all that we know they can be. So that's something new I think you don't know. I had no idea. Yeah. So as things come into focus a little more, I'll be able to talk a little more about it, but the school should be opening in 2018.
That is interesting. That is very, very top shelf, as I like to say. That's top shelf.
Yeah, man. That communication thing, you know, when people ask, you know, who is your ideal customer? Everybody who needs to communicate. How about that? So it's just the same message.
Wow.
Different venue. We need it. It's something we all need, and we need to perfect consistently. So whatever I can do to kind of enrich an environment wherever I'm there.
You know, it's interesting you're talking about charter schools. My kids go to charter schools, school, and President-elect Trump, I mean, it's going to be a couple of days he'll be President Trump. His nominee for education, Secretary of Education, it's Betsy DeVos, is a huge proponent for charter schools. And I know it has been a big to-do on, you know, whether her coming into office means, you know, the start of the beginning of the end for public schools as we know them today, because I know one of her initiatives, I'm sure she's going to want to push out the front door, is more charter schools, which means more privatizations of schools, which means she really leans towards a voucher system, which, you know, it works well for middle class America and people who can afford it, but the voucher system really puts our poor in a pickle of not being able to afford any kind of quality of education, and we'll probably have to. I mean, it sets up an interesting conversation. And my question to all of this is, and it sounds like you are for them, but are you? What's your thoughts on charter schools? I mean, some people love them, some people hate them.
Yeah, let me say that, you know, I've been in the education field as an educational speech language pathologist since 94.
Dang, you old.
I'm old. I got to catch up with you. I can't let you cross that 50 mark alone, so I have to stay on your heels. So, so I was in a traditional school system from 94 to 98. And when I came back to work after having Micah in 98, I went into a charter school, and here it is 2016, and I have not set foot in a traditional school again.
Really?
So I would be one of those.
Wow, I did not know that. I did
you
not.
Know,
that's interesting.
And I would suppose that part of the appeal is that of the entrepreneurial mindset, because charter schools are usually trying some new pedagogy or just trying something different because the same old thing just didn't work. When they are well thought out and put together with the right systems in place, with the right players in place, and done with the right motive, they can be wonderful. But yes, if those things are not in place, it can really, when I say do damage, you know, our kids only have one go at this K-12 thing. And it is scary when folks get out there and experiment with our children without having all their ducks in a row. So even in terms of what you mentioned with the incoming Secretary of Education, I mean, it's like everything else, if we learn how to line up and suit up and play the game and do our thing too, we can benefit. But we, you know, you can't just show up. You have to prepare. You have to do the work.
Yeah, that's the key, right? And let me be honest.
Key.
You said some really, your comments on that were really, you know, it had some weight on it. It had depth. And yet, the only thing I could think about the entire time you were speaking is that you got in the use of the word pedagogy in here on the conversation. I literally tuned everything else out. I just want you to know.
Oh, my goodness. That is hilarious. You and Patrina tripped me up with that. I'll say something, and then y'all throw me the word back and say, I didn't hear anything after that. So
yeah,
I
blanked out.
Start up 2017. Well, tell me how you feel about charter schools.
Well, I mean, my kids go to one, so I'd be very much of a hypocrite to say that I thought that they were interesting. You know, I've got a warped sense of, and I'll go ahead and share this since you asked, is that I'm right now, and this wasn't probably so 5 years ago, but right now I'm for anything that will shake up the system. So albeit I think it's much healthier in looking at America, not Black America or any kind of, you know, subsection, but just America. I think it's better to have a sound, solid public school system. However, I think at this point there is a lot of laziness, and there's a lot of political control, and there's a lot of manipulation going on, especially in the bigger cities, with public schools. I know if people remember here in Atlanta, there was a huge scandal where, I don't know, 40 teachers went to jail or at least had the potential, and then they got their sentences. Some of them got their sentences reduced to a slap on the wrist. But at first it was like they sent all of Atlanta teachers to jail because of this huge, you know, scandal that went all the way up allegedly to the superintendent because they were trying to meet certain quotas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the teachers union, I know there's a need for unions. I'm not a union buster or a person that thinks, you know, like many Republicans, that unions are useless. But I do believe at this point, unions are not serving the purpose that they were meant to. They do a lot of things that are good, but they also are controlled themselves by a political voice. And so I think public schools, for now getting into the Black community, have done them a disservice over the last 20 years. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that will bust that monopoly up, because at this rate, you know, Black schools are becoming an extinct. And I mean, in sense of public schools from K through 12, they either suck greatly or they're about to be sucking greatly and they're being torn down and they're being regentrified. There's so much negativity that's going on. I'm for someone coming in and saying, you know what, we're going to blow all of this system up and get with this new thing. You know, I think that's how I think. And so I know that's a, mm-hmm. you know, it's not pragmatic, but I just love when that kind of sense of, you know, oh, you sued the teachers union felt like, you know, we just got it made and we're just going to keep failing black students and one out of five black males will not graduate from high school. And that's okay, because quite honest, if that had happened, if those numbers were prevalent in any other culture in America, you told Italians, if you told Hispanics, you told any other culture, look at these boys right here. One out of five is going to make it to graduation. The other four are going to be in prison or they're going to be in the streets. The United States would be on hold until they got that worked out.
Well, let me say this, Clark. You know, we try to, as they say, keep it real, and we talk about the dynamics that are within various cultures. Two of the strongest charter schools that I have worked at were founded and galvanized by Caucasian parents who wanted something different for their kids, and they came together and took control over what they could take control over and came out with something new and fantastic. Beyond the traditional kind of just banging kids over the head with curriculum and being a curriculum imparter of curriculum, just facilitating really rich environments where kids were inspired to learn and just a different atmosphere. But as I said before, they wanted something different. But the message to them, of course, often is different than the inherent message to us, because they really do believe they can do anything they want to do. So they want to – and oftentimes they do, right? So,
right.
So the political systems that you're referring to are often on their side. So and, of course, a lot of tricky and interesting things happen here in D.C. And part of that was – you know, they were like, yeah, the traditional public school is not working, but I don't want to have to send my kid to this expensive private school either. So why don't we come together and establish our own culture? And it's been a beautiful thing.
Well, you know, the big pushback.
Go ahead. No, at one of them, Obama was there and said, this is the way all schools should be. Yeah.
And listen, there are some outstanding charter schools that are just, you know, in all cultures. There are some wonderful,
mm-hmm.
because obviously charter schools catered first to their communities, their localized
right.
communities, and we understand that that makes sense. But here's the big argument. The big argument is that funding. It always comes down to money, right? And the argument
mm-hmm.
is that if we privatize and do those kind of community things, and if I live in a shitty community, then, you know, what are we going to do? So, and that's an interesting idea, but an interesting concept, and I understand that. Here's my problem with that. We have far too many dollars in our community, speaking
mm-hmm.
about African Americans right now. And I know
mm-hmm.
there's some other communities that would have this issue too, but I don't belong to them, so I can't speak to them. But speaking
right.
to this community, there's way too many too much disposable income that can be used, that we should be thinking about using, I should say, in those ways where you have a very rundown community and, you know, we as a broader brush of that community come together and say, let's put our money in. You know, look how many
mm-hmm.
athletes we got. I know people pick at athletes, but why not? They're multimillionaires and percentage wise in every sport except for hockey, you know, there's a minority majority that runs or that highlights those industries. So
mm-hmm.
I can't help but lean on the fact that every football club has about 50 or so people that, you know, that suit up each week on 30 something teams, multiply that by, you know, itself, and then it take 65% of that is probably African American. Basketball is probably 90%. So, you know, baseball is a smaller percent, but if you look at the minorities in baseball, it's a higher percent. So why don't we have the money again? Explain to me, why don't we have money to open up a school and we can blow right. $1.9 trillion on weave? So I'm a little out of it, the excuse, you know, industry, I guess. So we've just got to we got to look at it differently. We got to stop playing around. Donald Trump is in office now. If you think time for playing isn't over yet, something's wrong with you. So we really got to come together and figure this out. I didn't want to make this a, you know, educational thing, but why not? It's huge. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of what we, you know, if we don't get that right, none of this other stuff is going to matter.
Well, now that you say that, when we talk about the literacy rate, I always say, you know, we're looking at it as an educational issue, but it's a sociological issue. So even when you look at the literacy rate and the prison rate, illiteracy is one of the foremost commonalities that is prevalent within prison. So it is huge. So it's not just about putting more laws in place, prisons in place, and all of that. Let's get real and teach these babies how to read. And if they're not going to do it, then we have to. You know, you have me, again, who's trained and who's trained and passionate about literacy. And then you have you, who is a gifted mathematician, who, you know, maybe you'll take one or two under your wing and do some tutoring or whatever. We all have to kind of get our hands dirty and do what we can do, give whatever it is we have.
I just want to be able to use pedagogy in a sentence one time, just want, before I die, if I could just, like, naturally, not force, like, you know, ask somebody to say this so that I can use it. I want to just naturally just bam, let me pull that out.
You can do it. It basically means philosophy.
I know it's ideology. Like, you know, for training and education. I just never think to use it. It's just never popped in my head. I'm upset by that. You're better. You're just a, you know. Anyway, I got a lot of work to do on me.
What's up for tonight? That's what I want to know. Oh, no.
So we've got a crazy, fantastic show to start this wonderful year off. We've got a wonderful singer, lyricist, Habaka is in town. You know, and what's really cool is she's going to be calling in from Italy. So
she's in town. That means we're in Italy.
Yes, we are right now hanging out in Florence, Italy. Yeah. And, not joking, but yeah, we can dream.
Yeah, we can do that. Go ahead.
Yeah. And we've got the phenomenal life and relationship coach, Mitch Linda Hales, will be here a little later on, but we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to listen to one of her songs, and then we're going to have her on. So, guys, you're listening to the hottest show out. You better tell somebody. This is The Conversation, year number 7. We'll be right back. Oh.
Looking for a cafe with a home-like appeal where all who enter feel like they are part of something? Visit My Coffee Shop, located in East Lake, Atlanta, Georgia. MCS has a full breakfast and lunch menu, offering both hot and cold options, and is home of the amazing Basil Lemonade. But don't forget their assortment of freshly brewed coffees. Come on by at 2462 Memorial Drive, Atlanta, Georgia, 30317. We're pretty sure my coffee shop at East Lake will become your coffee shop, too.
It's the book everybody's talking about. This has been a public service announcement by acclaimed author Gay Polk Payton, based on the Latin term res ipsa loquitur, which means the thing speaks for itself, or more commonly known, it is what it is. This book speaks to relationships, fitness, parenting, religion, and more. Get your copy today by going to www.gaypulppeyton.com. This has been a public service announcement.
Survival Radio Network, with now more than 1 million downloads. Congratulations to the staff, producers, engineers, and hosts for your tireless pursuit of excellence. And thank you, our loyal listeners, for supporting this movement to inspire, motivate, and educate people worldwide. Survival Radio Network, Survival Radio Christian Network, and our new Survival Sports Radio Network broadcast top-notch shows Sunday through Saturday. Check us out by visiting our website at www.survivalradionetwork.us. SRN, we do radio 1 million strong.
Testing.
Hello? Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. You are tuned to the hottest network out. SRN. We do radio.
Coming up, our guest tonight is a wonderful, as you can tell, vocalist who sings a variety of styles, but one could argue that blues is certainly a home spirit for her voice. Please join me in welcoming the one and only, as I said before, hanging out in Italy, Habaka. Hey, what's going on, lady?
Hi, how you doing?
Super fantastic.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear.
Wonderful, wonderful.
So first let me say this, that we've had many a guest over the 7 years from Europe, Asia, Africa, continents, countries. Never, ever, you are very first from Italy.
Oh, my God. That's
How about
incredible.
That?
I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
So you've got a fantastic voice. I mean, you first to start. I normally start at the beginning. We're going to start where you are now. How'd you land in Italy?
Well, you know, it was nothing really but the grace of God, and I've been coming back and forth to Italy and living over here since 1996. And it actually started out, I did a 2-week tour, gospel tour, with the gospel group that I was with. And then when I went back home, the group broke up, and I sent them, the promoter, I sent him a message and asked him if he remembered me, that I was the lead vocalist for that group. And I told him that I was available if they needed, you know, if they needed any vocalists. Well, 2 weeks later, he responded, and he said, of course I remember you. And yes, we would love to have you in Italy touring. So that's where it all began. And I started touring here, and I've been doing it ever since.
Apparently. And you're doing, you've obviously done exceptionally well. And I always, I would like to hear it from performers, entertainers, singers, such as yourself, vocalists, who are currently overseas and, you know, are originally from the States. And shout out to Tennessee. Big love.
Oh, yes.
For your home state.
Yes.
How do Europeans accept American music? I'm using genres.
They love American music.
Yeah.
They love American music. And I was really surprised at how well versed and knowledgeable they are in the history of all of the genres of our music, because they actually love jazz, blues, gospel, R&B, pop, you name it. They know about it. They love it. They believe in having music in the school system, teaching their kids from a young age. And so even the concerts and festivals that I perform in, there's always full of people who actually know music very, very well. And so they appreciate you at a very high level, and they really appreciate, you know, what you're doing and what you're giving.
So that even leads me to an obvious follow-up, well, maybe not obvious, but a follow-up in my mind's eye of the fact that you talk about blues and jazz, and, you know, we know here in the States it found its roots in our culture, in our African-American culture. What's
exactly.
unique is that, what's almost shameful is that if you ask 1 out of 10 people, or especially the newer generation, tell me about the history of jazz, tell me the culture or history of blues, they'd have a glossy look in your eye. But you're telling me that Italians can, you know, at least the music-loving Italians can roll that off like, you know, like they invented it. So it's
exactly.
It's embarrassing,
like
a little bit, you know? Yeah, it's embarrassing.
And, you know, yes, it is. It really is. And when I found that out, then I really became more aware even of the fight that we really have to keep this music alive in America, because it's dying on the radio stations. You know, a lot of the radio stations it's slowly trying to be eliminated, but, you know, of course there's those of us who are out here fighting every day to keep it alive, to let the young generation to discover it.
What is it about blues that attracted you? You're from Nashville, so we know there's a lot of it there. Did you grow up with it? Is that how you fell in love with it? Because you could have, you said you were gospel. You could have chosen many art forms or genres to use that wonderful voice of yours.
Yes. Well, actually, because my father was a avid blues man, he started out playing the trumpet with Bobby Blue Bland, and he was also the band leader for him for about 15 years. And then he ended up being with B.B. King for like more than 20 years. And so I grew up with that music. I really had no choice. And my mother was also a jazz vocalist. And I grew up on the carnival, actually. my grandfather, he was a promoter in Nashville, very well known, and he was a pianist as well. And so, yeah, I really didn't have a choice. I actually tried not to be in the entertainment business, but it just was greater than me. At the end of the day, I ended up singing, so... I didn't have a choice. It was the Lord wanted me to do this. It's just in my blood, and I love it. And I sing jazz, I sing blues, I sing gospel, and I give my all to the music.
Habaka, why did you try to go against that? What is it that just even marginally may have disenchanted you that make you not want to go into the entertainment industry?
Well, I didn't want to go into the entertainment industry in the beginning because I felt that it was a very hard industry to be number one. And I really wasn't interested in, seeking out to be famous or anything like that. I just wanted to sing and then, like I said, it was just very difficult. It's as they say, it's a doggy dog world out there, and mm-hmm. It's very, very hard life. And you really, really, as far as my opinion, to be a real artist, you really sacrifice. You have to really love it in order to do it because you are always away from your family. You sacrifice so much. And you're always living out of a suitcase. And so that's why I really, I had to make a decision if I wanted to be an artist or, be a parent, so to speak. Because in my eyes, you can't do both well.
Mm. So here you are doing the soul's work of, as all artists do, to interpret what's going on in the world and to give folks something to think about. And listening to your music, again, there's a message in there. There is something that makes you think about what's going on the inside. Do you think that's something that's missing from mainstream music today?
Most definitely. It's. I think today the music is on, it's a very thin line. And I believe that the music today, it has no substance. You have to really search to really get that feeling because today it's like so much is so vulgar and it's just, it's taken a whole different turn from what I grew up with and the music that I grew up with and learned to love. And like you said, it has a message. You have to have a message. And I believe, interestingly, I used to have a really hard time thinking, okay, I'm singing music, I'm singing this, I need to be doing only gospel, it's not good. But when I started traveling throughout Europe and singing, God let me see that this is what you can touch anybody because they don't speak English, but they can feel what I was feeling, what I was giving to them, what I was interpreting. They could feel it, and they would come up to me after my concert. A lot of people come up to me after my concert and say, oh, my God, you have great vibrations. The vibration is great. You helped me. Thank you so much. I was so down. You opened my eyes. And I was in the beginning, I was like, I opened your eyes. I'm thinking this to myself, But that's where I learned that the spirit is the spirit.
Yes. Yeah, indeed, because, you know, the word says where the spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And I know this is your moment, your segment, but I wanted to share this, that as a speaker, I often speak from spiritual and scriptural principles, but don't usually cite scripture unless I am before a believing audience. And even when I don't cite scriptures, it's just as you say, folks come up and they ask questions, and oftentimes believers will come and be like, there's just something, and I was like, yeah, well, this is where it comes from, you know.
Exactly.
So, yeah, again, as I said, you know, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. And we're going to go on to listen to Love on the Brain. How about that? Why don't you bring that on in? Why don't you introduce
that
to us?
Well, you know what? This Love on the Brain is actually done by Rihanna. And I just took it and did it Habaka style. I turned around and did it Habaka style. That's right.
Into
a Habaka style. It's for grown-up people. I put my heart in it. Yeah.
Here it is, y'all.
And you got me like, oh, what you want from me, what you want from me. And I tried to buy your pretty heart, but the price too high. Baby, you got me like, oh, 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 your love when I fall apart,
fall apart.
So you can put me together, throw me up against the wall. Baby, you got me like, ah, ah, ah. Don't stop loving me. Don't quit loving me. Just start loving me. Yeah. Oh, babe, I'm still fighting my fire just to get close to you. Can we burn, babe? And I run for miles just to get a taste.
Absolutely love it. Thank you so much for being a part of our show. We love your music. We love you. I personally thank you for your support that you've shown our TV channel. And I look forward to doing more collaborations with you. And who knows? We might show up in Italy next week. You just never know.
Oh, my God. That would be so good. That would be great. You never know. That's right. You just never know. I love you guys, too, and I really enjoy your program, and I'm really happy about what you all are doing and in the communities, and I think you guys are just fantastic, and I appreciate you all inviting me on the show, and I just released this album, so I appreciate it, and for you all showing the love, and thank you so much.
Well, before we let everyone know where they can pick up your album, and for your Italian followers, where you're going to be performing next, you got to tell me,
yeah.
The Panther of Cremona, that's hot. That's hot.
Yes, thank you. Yes, they gave me that name because there's a very famous Italian singer in Italy named Mina. And she was from this town called Cremona, and they called her the Tiger of Cremona. And so they compared me to Mina, and they called me the Panther of Cremona.
Well, that's an honor.
Yes, it is, because she's a great vocalist. She is really great, and I love her. And she's been around a long time. And as a matter of fact, now she doesn't even really perform out. She just makes a new album every year, and everybody's on pins and needles waiting for her to buy it, you know. So
wow, must be nice.
Exactly. But she's great. One day when you get a chance, look her up. Her name is Mina, and they compared me to her, and I accepted that as a great honor as well. Yes.
So where can people find your music right now?
They can find my music right now at my website, www.habakakfj.com, or they can find it on the digital stores at Amazon or iTunes and Spotify, actually in any digital store. And I'm just thrilled about it. It's going well so far. I just released it here in Italy, and I will be releasing it and promoting it in the summer at home in the U.S.
You are fantastic. Can you say goodbye to our Italian friends in Italian for us?
Ma certo, grazie a tutti. Ciao a tutti i miei amici in Italia, chi sta ascoltando, ti amo. Grazie tanto per sempre essere con me. And ci vediamo, ce l'ho un concerto 6 gennaio a Bergamo. Grazie
Love
tanto
it.
To the convo, the conversation. Grazie Clark and grazie Michelle.
You are fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Love you guys.
Woo! All right. Habaka.
Have a good.
There we go. Habaka's in the house. Love it. Hey, guys. Hey, we've got more for you. We're not even going to go to break. We're on such a roll right here in 2007. We're just going to roll right into our next guest because you're going to have just as much fun. Our last guest tonight is known for helping smart and successful women have smart and successful relationships. Please welcome life and relationship coach, Miss Linda Hales in the house. Hey, Linda, how are you? Welcome from sunny, I'm sure, or Florida.
You know what? I am. Where are you at? You're in Atlanta?
Oh, yeah. You're in Texas, right? My bad. I'm sorry.
I'm in Texas right now. No,
there
man. I'm from Orlando. That's where I hail from. Linda Hales hails from Orlando.
The
Actually, I'm from Puerto Rico.
That's right. There you go.
Your best friend is from there?
Yeah, my best friend is from Orlando, so I spent many spring breaks in Orlando.
Oh, man, if you spent spring breaks in Orlando, you have a lot of stories that you can't talk about.
I know. Yeah, well, off-air only. Well, welcome
Thank
aboard.
You so Thank
you
so much for having me on this
yes.
show.
Yes. You know, I found you because I'm always looking for people who just have that, you know, that inner glow. And it comes out in everything you do and everything that I found out there. Now, I'm going to ask where this comes from, but I know a little bit about your story. I know that you had a tumultuous relationship and 7 years ago or somewhere around that ballpark. And it really led to a revelation evolution, I should say, in your life. Can you talk a little bit about that transition?
Yes, absolutely. In 2010, January of 2010, my marriage came to an abrupt halt, not even like falling apart gradually. It just like one day I was married and the next day the locks were changed on the door that I was living in, which was my home with my husband. And
wow.
So it's funny now. But that day when that happened, I was very scared. All I had was the gasoline in my car. I was a stay-at-home mom, so I didn't work, so I didn't have any money. He took me off of the bank accounts that same day. So literally my car and the gas that was in it, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And courage factor, the term courage factor grew because it took a lot of courage to pick myself up that day. I was crying. I was trembling. I was shaking. I was actually, you know, scared of the situation. I was scared of him. I was scared of life. And I still had to get up and do it because life doesn't really care if you're scared or not. You're either going to face it or you're going to back down in a corner. And I found out through this situation that I was not created to back down in a corner, like a lion in me, you know, that fierce person. When the word fierce wasn't even, you know, cool to use, I became fierce. And I was like, you know, when people would ask me, Linda, how did you do it? And I'm like, girl, I just make it look easy in these dresses and these high heels, but it's hard, okay? It's hard, girl. Let me tell you, you need some courage. And so that's how that was born.
So that's where it was born, but, you know, clearly you already had it in you, just weren't aware that it was there. Like so many of us who finally wake up and realize we are better than we are. A lot of what you coach people on is to be a better version of themselves. What are some of the first things you have to bring out of them before they can see that better version?
Okay. One of the things that I found out in the last 2 years is that people have to want to become better. There's a very big difference where you see potential in someone and you're trying to get it out of them than when the person comes to you and says, I can't do this anymore. I need help because I want to change. And so I began to have more success with my clients when people came to me ready for change and ready for the accountability and ready for my foot in their butt, because that's the kind of coaching that I do. And so you're right. It's in there. And it's got to be coached out of you. It's like, you know what? I'm going to make an analogy. I'm going to make a little metaphor. When you drive, like I can go to a dealership right now and buy a Mustang or some type of nice muscle car. But if I don't know how to drive that car, the engine or the horsepower or the Hemi doesn't really matter if I don't know how to drive that properly to get that potential out of that engine. And so I think that when people come to me, I'm that person. When you are ready, when you're like, Linda, I'm ready, girl. I'm ready. Then let's go. I'm going to say some things that are going to hurt your feelings. It's not because I want to hurt your feelings. It's because they're truths. And you're paying me to bring – it's like when you work out and you break that muscle down and then you're sore for 2 days. Well, that muscle cannot grow unless you bring that pain to it, unless you break it down and rebuild it. So that's how I coach. And I see it in people all the time. But I love when the person is ready for change. I'm like, Linda, I'm 45. I can't continue to live like this anymore. I want change.
So I'm curious, as a coach, your job is to know when you are getting the best out of, in this case, your people you're working with, right? And many
right.
times people fool themselves. I know just by watching people who do relationship and life coaching is that one thing to say, you know, because I'm trying to impress Linda, yeah, Linda, I'm ready, right? And inside, I'm like, you know. What is it that you know or notice or feel or, you know, a sixth sense? Or what is it that you know when you know that they are really ready to take the next step?
When in their conversation, they begin to take ownership. Even, for example, even my tumultuous and very dysfunctional relationship, there was a point that I had to say to myself, self, you are enabling this by staying in it, by playing victim, by not standing up, by not putting your foot down, by not having a boundary, by not taking up for yourself. You are actually enabling this. No, I wasn't saying, you know, hit me or be abusive to me, but I stayed in it way longer than I should have because of fear. And that fear led me not to take responsibility because it's better to blame. Everybody needs a boogeyman. So the minute somebody's blaming that guy and it was their fault and he did this to me, and I'm so sure he did that to you, and I'm so sure she did that to you. But where, you know, they weren't doing it just, you know, they didn't just randomly choose you. You were in a relationship with this person. So how did you play a part in this? When I hear a person actually start to take responsibility for their situation and not be a victim by it, then I'm like, they're ready. And they're still going to feel scared. You know, I when I coach my clients, I say to them, Clark, when we get off this phone, you're going to probably get scared. You're going to double, you know, guess yourself, second guess yourself. what do you need me to say to you when you're feeling that way? Because I know what I want to say to you. But what is it that you want me to remind you? You know, if you give me full permission, you're going to get your feelings really hurt. But so, and, you know, I teach my clients in relationships, you can also say to your man, honey, you know, I want to love you the way that I know how to love you. But when you're angry, what do you want me to do when you're angry? Do you really want me to leave you alone? Do you really want space, or are you just saying that? Tell me what to do so that I do what works for you. And so I start, talking to my clients the way that I want them to start dealing with their relationships and their life instead of, you know, going through life like, this is how I do it. Because we all go into relationships doing it. This is how I love. You don't like the way I love? What's wrong with you?
So it sounds like you're advocating for that that assertive voice, not aggressive, not necessarily, you know, coming in like gangbusters, but definitely the assertive voice that speaks up for your own values and boundaries. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, ma'am. And, you know, it's ironic or funny that you say that because I have a very deep tone of voice. I speak, you know, with authority. And so a lot of people, you know, mistake that. Oh, man, she's loud or she likes conflict. I hate conflict. I wear my emotions on my sleeves. I don't like to argue. But I guess it's cool if you bark loud, you know.
Well, it's fine because you have such an infectious laugh to go with it. So I've been called a velvet hammer, so I guess I will pass that on to you as well. So,
I like that.
Okay. A velvet hammer, yes. So let's talk about a couple of cliches about relationships. One being,
okay,
you train people how to treat you. What do you think about that?
You do. I kind of alluded to that at the very beginning when I said, you stay in these relationships, and when you fail to have a boundary, when you fail to be assertive, when you fail to take up for yourself, when you fail to say, hey, we're not going to be cursing on this phone. I'm going to hang up now, not because I want to be disrespectful, but because I don't want you cursing at me, and I don't deserve that. So we're going to hang up, and we're going to do this later, right? So when you fail to tell somebody, this is not acceptable to me, that's when you train them how to teach you, and they continue to do that because you never draw the boundary. You never stop them. Hey, that's not acceptable to me.
Mm-hmm. And Linda, do you believe that when you do raise those stop signs that you're even more respected because someone kind of feels the strength from you? Because there is a strength in holding up boundaries when somebody's cursing at you or railing at you, you know? So do you feel like that is the beginning to the culture of facilitating a culture of respect? The first step, that if that person is going to respect you, it starts with saying, hey, I'm not going to take that.
Right, absolutely. And one of the things that I teach is women to be women of high value. And doing that for yourself is part of being a high value. Why do, you know, there's a book titled Men Love Bitches. And the title is very misleading because it's not teaching you how to be mean or, it's just that the title is great marketing.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone, not just men, people love other people who have a boundary that they enforce in a loving way. Hey, this is how you deal with me, and I will deal with you that way. And you become a high-value person because most people are not used to dealing with someone who respects themselves enough to say, hey, I don't like to engage in this type of communication, or I don't like to do this. Or even a simple, when I text you, I expect to text back within, you know, 30 to 40 minutes unless you're working. And then, you know, I understand it's during work hours. Oh, wow. You know.
And so why do some of us women have it twisted where we think taking crap is something that we have to do? Or it goes the other way, too, because women can be abusive as well and overly demanding. So why is it that either party, be it the male or the female or whomever, think that that's something that they need to do to show their strength, which is to take the crap? Why do we do that?
Well, I'll tell you, I wish it was a one-part answer. It's so many variables. For example, my parents were preachers, and so I grew up in church. My parents were not, you know, they were both divorced before, but my parents stayed married until my father died. So I didn't grow up in a broken home. And my parents did a lot of marital retreats and weekends at home and at church. So I constantly heard, the body is not yours. You should not deny each other unless you are fasting, and then come together so that the devil doesn't have a way to tempt you. And so I grew up like, hey, the body is not yours. When your husband says, let's go, let's go, you know? Seriously, when I was young, I'm like, oh, man, I just got to be ready, you know? So,
wow.
But that upbringing, the religion has so much to play. You know, even when I was older and I was like, God, I really want to get divorced. You know, the Lord doesn't want that. And you start seeking advice from the elders or from other people that you trust who are very Christian and who are powerful prayer warriors. And they're like, you know, the Lord doesn't want that. And you're like, you start to live a life of what the Lord doesn't want or what church didn't say, but it doesn't feel right to you. And then even if you're an atheist, you believe, well, women are nurturers and we're supposed to be the lovers and the givers and the accepted and unconditional. I don't think so. You know, I always say love is very conditional. The older we get, oh, come on, man. There is no unconditional love. It's very conditional. That's why people get divorced all the time. Because they should have added the clause, for better or for worse, or until you get cancer, or until you lose your job for more than 4 months. People do that. People do that. And so that's the truth, that even men, I especially deal with men who have been married for many years, either became widowed or divorced after 29 or 30 years, and they don't know how to date. So they start treating every woman like they did their wife, and they get taken. You
wow.
know, because they're such givers.
Women don't take advantage of men. That doesn't happen.
Well, I'm not saying she a gold digger.
Right. Oh, man. I knew that would bring something funny as heck out of you. So that was a setup. And you
delivered. Hey, I walked right into those. I love those.
Oh, amen. So your book, Girl, Get the Courage Factor. What is the big takeaway that you want readers to come away with, that life-changing takeaway?
That in order to have success at anything, you're going to need to make difficult choices. Once you have made a certain amount of choices and you're in a difficult place in life, every single choice, every option is a hard one. You know, as I raise my kids and I talk to my 17-year-old who is really light-skinned and has green eyes and he's just super, super, super attractive, I'm like, Evan, once somebody is pregnant, all the choices are bad. If you keep it, I'm not ready financially for it. If you give it up for adoption, oh, man, how could I live with myself with that? If you have an abortion, oh, man, that's crazy. So it's like all the options are hard. Which one are you going to take? And then which one are you going to commit to? So that's the big takeaway, that people think that having your own business or doing this or doing that is easy. You're going to need to make hard choices, like me borrowing $144,000 worth of student loans to get my degree. That's how I changed my life. It wasn't because I prayed really hard. Prayer was wonderful. I currently translate here in Joel Osteen's church at Lakewood. I translate for Joel. You know, it's a great honor. But it was more than prayer that helped me change my life. It was prayer, faith, and believing in something higher and taking action. And so that's the big takeaway. You're going to need to make hard choices, and those hard choices require that you take an action.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an anthology. I'm sorry. It's a book where 15 authors got together and wrote, and all of our stories are pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm. In what way are they similar?
They're the same because the book is written for entrepreneurial women, written by entrepreneurial women, women who are still currently working full-time and are also pursuing their dreams, things that they had to overcome. There are ladies in the book who served federal prison time. There's ladies that served jail time. There's ladies that left abusive relationships. There are people who are still working. There's a realtor who is 32 years old that owns 17 homes, and she's telling you how to do it. I mean, It's crazy. It's a great book.
So it's real life.
It's real life.
Tell everyone how they can get your book and how they can keep up with you, Linda.
They can go to lindahales.com. I have a free 5-day e-course on how to find a good man. Again, the title is misleading because, you know, really it's you. We're going to work on you so you can find a better person. And you can get my book at bit.ly/girlgetyourcouragefactor. However, I'm promoting a free class on the 19th of this month, and you can get it at bit.ly/maybeitsyou. It's for those women that keep attracting the same kind of man, don't even know how to approach a man, all those problems that women have in dating.
All right, there it is. You know how to get in touch with her. Linda's ready for you.
All Linda right. is ready
you.
For you, and I hope you're ready for Linda. There you go.
Right, more importantly.
More importantly. Be ready.
Thank you.
Thank you so much
for having me on your show. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's awesome having you on, and congratulations on all the things you've achieved and will achieve in 2017. And you did mention, I believe, your conference is coming up, right? Your workshop?
The 19th, yes, the 19th.
The 19th, mm-hmm. Okay. If you would see any flyers like that, I'll make sure you put it on our website with links going to yours so that our listeners who, for whatever reason, they can't find Linda Hales, they'll be able to find you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Absolutely. Linda Hales, everybody. Thank you so much. Yes. What a great show. We've got a lot in. Great way to start off the 2017, seventh year of this show being on air live. Michelle, once again, it is always a pleasure. You made a lot of my headaches go away because, you know, I came into the show a little tense, and now, probably need to go have a Moscow meal and, you know, hang out for the rest of the night. There you go.
Well, fantastic. And the check is in the mail. That sounds like some work was done. So, I meant to say the invoice. See, I got it backwards. See, it's time to wrap up the show. I'm talking in reverse.
Hey, when the next time you're going to have, like, some, what was that thing you had? Some turkey wings. Did you do some fried turkey wings or something like that?
Yeah, I have some frozen wings in the freezer. Maybe I'll do that near the end of the week.
Yeah,
when
send your peeps. Send your peeps a notice so we can come on through. Probably not Bowie, Maryland right about now. Y'all probably got like 17 feet of snow, but we'll definitely, you know, send out for it.
Hey, and you know, I believe the tickets for probably the April timed entries for the museum are released, I believe, in a couple of weeks. So, you know, you guys be on the lookout.
Oh, please. Hey, remind me of that. Yeah, please remind me of that because I want to make sure we do that.
Okay. Sounds
all right.
We'll be in touch.
So once again, shout out to Mom. Shout out to the boss. Much love to you guys who have been a part of this show for its inception. Or if this is your first time listening in, we hope you got something out of it. Our goal is always to inspire, motivate, and educate listeners worldwide. Big shout out to our Italian guests who came in today. Habaka, we love you. Miss Linda, we certainly love you. We'll be back next week with a nice lineup once again. Got some surprises for this year. We're going to have some major guests on. You know how we always have major guests. All of our guests are major. We're going to have some really cool shows on there. It's going to be a little bit out of the box normality. So, any last thoughts?
Hold on.
What?
Yes. Next week, Patrina Kane will be on. She's not Patrina.
She's gonna get you for saying
Patrina
that.
Kane.
She's gonna get you. We do have the dynamic Patrina coming on. She's going to be doing a segment once a month, which would be new to the conversation. We're looking forward to it because she has a wealth of insight and knowledge, and we love us some Patrina King or Kang, as you say. Looking forward to that. So it's going to be fun. Tune in next week.
Absolutely.
We're going out with Strange Fruit. This is a rendition, Habaka style, is how she would say it. So enjoy yourself. Any shout-outs you want to give real quick?
Now more than ever, God bless the whole wide world.
Good night.
That's it. I had to say it slowly and deeply, man.
Good night.
Night, night.
See you next week. Thank you.